Listen to people. Shut up and listen. The real idea of community empowerment is understanding from within and let the people tell you what they need the most rather than coming with solution pre-designed.
Welcome to Communicating Purpose. I'm John Higginson, founder of purpose-led communications agency Higginson Strategy. And I believe that the best way to get a message across clearly is by talking about something you honestly and passionately believe in. By doing so, you bring people with you. Your passion becomes theirs. And I call this the power of purpose. In today's episode, I'm joined by two guests who represent two powerful sides of purposeful communications. From creating the structural conditions for systemic change to championing the voices of people on the ground who are too often unheard. Sonia Graham is the Chief Executive Officer of Global Action Plan, an environmental charity mobilizing the most influential institutions in society to shift away from harmful systems that are otherwise seen as the status quo. She is accompanied by Musa Silla, a community organizer and trainer who's a powerful advocate for grassroots change. Musa spent over a decade working to build vibrant, resilient local communities and economies. Now part of Global Action Plan's New Voices group, Musa is amplifying community-driven calls for environmental justice with the aim of electing a clean air mayor. Sonia and Musa, it's a pleasure to have you both on the show. Starting with you, Sonia, can you just tell us a bit about your own background and your journey to where you are today?
Sure. Thank you, John. Thank you for having us on. I grew up moving country every few years due to my dad's job. So I lived in something like 8 different houses, went to 4 different schools. But what this really meant was that I got to live in and see some amazingly different cultures and habitats. And this led to a complete and utter fascination with people. So our differences, our commonalities, our relationships with the environment around us. And that pretty much set my course, really. So I went on to university to study psychology and biology. And then post-uni, my first proper job was with Shell, the oil company, where I was until I jumped into the world of environmental and carbon consultancy. And then more recently, 12 years ago, environmental charity, where I am now at Global Action Plan. So there's the brief.
Yeah, well, that's nice and brief. And I'm just going to ask you to kind of go into a bit more detail on certainly your background in psychology and biology. I find very interesting. I always found psychology interesting and did it at A level. I had to leave my school to find a place that would do psychology A level. That's certainly an area I'm very interested in. How have you found that's complemented your work at GAP?
I mean, it underpins all of it. Ultimately, my job is about working out how do we help people to make decisions that protect ecosystems and as a result us and the rest of our fellow citizens. So a lot of these decisions require overcoming our natural human biases, so things like thinking short term, discounting importance or likelihood of things that are tricky and scary and so on. So most of my early work at GAP was actually using models from health psychology and applying those to environmental behaviours. So it really does underpin everything I'm doing at GAP these days.
Great. Musa, I'm going to bring you in. You're a seasoned community organiser. You've worked with thousands of residents in London, but you're not from London yourself, are you? Do you want to just tell us a bit about your background and how you got to where you are?
Oh, yes, of course. So I am originally from France, Paris, but very quickly I felt that comfortable living in London, and my journey working as a community organizer started, yes, about 10 years ago, where I took on a role through a program called the Community Organizers Program. It's a government program that has been initiated in 2011 by the Cabinet Office to accompany their devolution agenda, which means putting more power in the hand of the communities. So I've been trained to become a community organizer. And the model of community engagement that we've been trained into is called, what was called RSLM. And RSLM stands for Root Solution Listening Matters. So the very first thing that we've been taught is to listen to people, shut up and listen. Because quite often, people who work in the community development come with pre-designed solutions. And the real idea of community empowerment is understanding from within and let the people tell you what they need the most rather than coming with solution pre-designed. So I've been doing that for my first year, and the first thing I've been doing is knocking people door, listening about their vision, aspiration, love and concern about their local area, how they are engaged.
Great. And I think that's a good point there. That's one point of communication that we sometimes forget about, especially in the communications industry. We always think about broadcast. We're on reception as well sometimes. And we were born with two ears and one mouth, I was once told. I thought that's quite nice. It means you should be listening for twice as long as you're talking. So Musa, just tell us about the work with New Voices. Why a clean air mayor's so vital for London? You don't really need to tell me. I've been working with Rosamund Kissy Deborah on this issue. It's an issue I'm very, very passionate about in London. I've got two children in London myself. We're in Southeast London, just around the corner from Rosamund. But I'd like to hear it from you. So just tell us about that.
Well, I'm passionate about community empowerment and working with people who are less represented and giving agency to people who feel that they don't have power to change things. So as I said, through my experience and my years working with the community, is about enabling people who have a concern to do things for themselves. When it comes to air pollution, a lot of people don't know the effect of pollution to them, to their health and to their well-being. So I think it's really important to bring this information to those who don't necessarily have this information directly to them, especially in a city like London, where traffic, economy, and there's so much happening, and yet people don't know the effect of living in a cosmopolitan city like London.
Yeah. Sonia, so how do you make sure that some of these complex messages about climate change and air pollution and others really resonates with audiences? What are the communications tools you're using?
I mean, as Moose says, a lot of it is about listening and co-developing and testing all our messaging with the audiences that we're working with on the ground. Because ultimately, a lot of the problems that we work on are the gaps between how people on the ground are seeing an issue and how politicians are talking about them or how policy is addressing them. And so we do a lot of co-developing, a lot of testing, and this leads to us learning new things about the issues and working out how to better engage with our end audiences on it. So, for example, on the work we've been doing with Musa and the New Voices, we've really found out that, like, you can't talk about air pollution in London without talking about damp and mould in housing, because those things go hand in hand with communities in London. And so although damp and mould in housing isn't our focus as an environmental charity, it's not forest or fossil fuel related, we know this is a critical issue, and so therefore it is something that is now integral to our messaging and campaigning around air pollution.
And just give us an example of how that engagement works, because engagement is an area of communications that I don't do an awful lot of work with, that kind of local engagement. But how does it work? Are you hiring out community halls and sitting down with people?
Predominantly, what we do, we work, me as a community organizer, been working in my area. I have built a strong network of local residents that I call them active residents that can be mobilized and galvanized based on their interest and concern. And when you are hyper connected like this, it's easy to connect with your neighborhood. So we call them community champion, community leaders. We work with community leaders. So I worked with hundreds of community leaders. So I'm not going to say it's easy, but for me, it's easy to engage on a specific topic by working with this network of people that I trained or build relationship with. It can be a community hall. It can be around a meeting or a community event that already exists or is happening by holding a stall, or we can invite people, something that we find really beneficial and helpful when you want to bring people together is around food. So we can organize a day when we can share food and discuss topic. So it's a variety of different ways to bring people together, but it is predominantly working with an existing network of people that can bring other neighbors around a specific topic. I wanted to say another thing about the tools that we use, especially through the program that I've been through with New Voices. Number one, we have break down the jargon of the health issues that people might have as a result of being affected in polluted air. As we know, sometimes this jargon is hard to understand, but by breaking it down and bringing it back to the community, raise awareness of those issues. So we have brought a lot of education and information to our community. We obviously listen to them. So by whether bring them into a place or go and listen to them where they live, where they hang about. And collectively, what we've done, we have made a manifesto, which is a list of key points. And we start lobbying people in position of power to make sure that these policies, this manifesto, have find a sounding ear to those who might make a change.
Great. And I think I've had about 60 guests on the show, and no one has ever mentioned before that food is one of their main weapons to get people talking, but it really is. It is one of the best ones. It doesn't matter what social level anyone's from. If you want to do a deal, if you want to speak to people, get people eating, because it just breaks down those barriers, doesn't it, if you're eating together?
It does, yeah. I think it might be the reason why we got so many MPs to our last Westminster event as well, the cupcakes that were on offer. So,
oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. secret weapons, yeah. Sonia, you've been at GAP now for quite a long time, over a decade, I think about 13, 14 years. Has there ever been a failure or something that seemed like a failure at the time that you've learned from later?
Oh, it's tricky. I'm sure almost on a daily basis, as you're trying out new messaging, new campaigns, new directions. The one that keeps me up at night is still just a personal one where I was brought in to do this speech on environmental leadership. And this was about 10 years ago, so I was quite new to the scene. And my boss was on holiday, so I got drafted in to do one on environmental leadership to a room full of 100 leaders on a leadership retreat. Mm-hmm. And I'd made this incredible prezi with very intricate content and like video clips and vox pops, and put it onto my laptop and downloaded and done all the things that you should do, and then got to the room and the blinds were broken, so no one could actually see it. So I still remember to this day that feeling of being at the front of a room, you know, about to sort of go through this whizzy presentation, disarmed and not able to talk about it. And I think for me, I mean, I don't know what you learn from that, but I mean, one, go on holiday the same week as your boss maybe, but secondly, it's definitely to make sure that it's not any occasion is not just dependent on you and one story. And so always having up your sleeve exercises to get everyone else in a room, sharing their experiences and learning from them, rather than relying on just one point of view at the front for an entire session, perhaps. But it's probably not the organisational failure you're looking for, but that's certainly one that I still get cold sweats about.
No, it's almost making me sweat just hearing that now. And I mean, another point of that is just don't rely on tech, right? Because it's always the tech that lets you down in these kind of scenarios. You know, every single time we put on a awards for parliamentarians called the Political Purpose Awards. It's always the sounds not coming on when the video is on, things like that. So I always like to think, okay, let's use tech, but be ready for the tech not working and being able to talk without it. And I also really like now when we do PowerPoint presentations, we do a lot of PowerPoint presentations because it's the standard form of how you pitch to win business, and just having less words on there and more pictures so that it's actually you talking, you know, because so many people get that wrong on PowerPoint presentations. They have all the words on there, and they just end up saying what's on their PowerPoint presentation. It's literally the worst way of presenting. So feel for you there for that one 10 years ago in front of 100 of your peers that you probably thought all knew more than you did about the subject that you were meant to be talking to them about. What's one of your biggest career wins, Musa, that you've felt really proud of?
I think that the challenge here is to pick one. But I go for this one. It's a work that I initiated about 4 years ago now. I think we did start on the 9th of April 2020. So government have announced a lockdown. Everyone been isolated home. Many people start panicking. Some of the people that I train, part of my network, start calling me, telling me we need to organize. I think the situation sounds really, really scary. We surely faced a crisis, especially within the system. All the council worker had to isolate. There was no support on the ground. So we sit down with some of my colleague and we lobbied our boss, which obviously as a boss asked all the staff to stay home and didn't want to take the responsibility to put us on the ground. We lobbied him and we decided to start a food provision, which we called it a Selby Food Hub. And we started the Selby Food Hub on the, as I said, the 9th of April 2020, with a clear instruction from the boss telling us, okay, you'll do it for 6 weeks. You have £500 and then we shut the food bank. It's just because it's a crisis. I think people find it hard to get into supermarket. They need to queue, social distancing. Those who are vulnerable cannot go out, have to have food at home. So we start organizing ourselves. We get the food. We mobilize 35 volunteers the first day when we opened. Cut the long story short, after 9 months, so we did bypass my boss, our boss, deadline. So we went, it's now embedded into the organization. After 9 months, we start supporting 600 families twice a week, receiving food parcels that cover at least 4 days of their needs, plus essentials, plus clothes, plus books. We realized there was a digital poverty. People could not access to data as everything had been shifted, many things shifted from face-to-face to online. So we start lobbying a service provider to have free data, and we start providing support and intelligence to GPs, hospital, probations, and local authorities. After 2 years, the Selby Food Hub worked with over 36 community groups, 900 families, totalizing 3,600 individuals, amongst them 180 babies, people under 2 years old. And outside any corporate or public funding, through the process of bringing people together, people start organizing themselves by street. Imagine we had 7 streets in Haringey. In each street, there was a house, and the house was acting as a drop-in food for Selby. So people, when they do their shopping, they drop the food in that house, and when the box is full enough, one volunteer was driving the food at the Selby Center. And now we have it like this for over 2 years, until we receive some funds from national lotteries. And I'm very proud to have been part of that. And I've seen on the forefront the power of organized communities when it comes to support each other and when face a crisis.
Wow, that's a great example of just a like a snowball rolling down a hill, isn't it? Of a project of just £500 helping out a few people to where it is today. And for those listeners who don't know Haringey, Musa, you're talking to us from Hackney, but Hackney and Haringey are two areas of London which do have quite high levels of deprivation in them. Sonia, Higginson Strategy is an organisation that works with a lot of purpose-led clients. Are there any areas that you think we should be exploring over in next year, say?
A big one for us at the moment is the impact of the online world, and in particular regulation of social media and the online world in creating a lot of rifts in society. And so I'd be really interested to see a PR agency engage in that, and how the use of those channels requires a system that is safer for everyone on it. So I'd be really interested to see you guys work more in that space, because I feel it's of growing importance. Everyone's waking up to it as an issue. It affects everyone. And it's something that is not going to go away without us making a lot of noise about why it needs to change and how it could be different.
Mm. I heard something just recently, and it's just when you flip, sometimes when you flip sentences around, it has a completely different meaning. And someone said, now I've got a son who's 13, he's got a smartphone now, but luckily he's not too into the communicating as much as my daughter, who's 11. She will communicate like crazy. So we're holding back from giving her a phone till she's at secondary school. And someone said, it's not when you let your child on the internet, it's when you let the internet into your child. And when you flip that around, it has a lot more scary meaning, and I think a kind of closer meaning. So we're waiting as long as possible on that. What mediums, what do you read, watch, listen to yourself? Musa, I'll go to you. What's your favourite ways of getting the news, or anything else that you find interesting?
Yeah, similarly, I listen to a lot of podcasts. Yeah, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I use the classic channels, obviously, mainstream media. And I love my local newspaper, so if I want to have information from
and that's what's happening, that must be the Hackney Gazette. Is that the Hackney Gazette?
We have the Hackney Gazette. That's right. Yes, absolutely. I do read Hackney Gazette quite a lot.
I'm a former local journalist, so I love the locals as well. Sonia, what forms of media do you enjoy?
I'm a big podcast listener, so I'll listen to a lot of the political podcasts and environmental podcasts whilst I'm either coming in and out of London since moving down to Sussex, or doing everything else. I like to listen because I can be sort of thinking and imagining alongside, being quite a visual person. But I also do just love a newspaper, so I will get a newspaper on the weekends and still work my way through it. It's probably old fashioned now, but I still very much enjoy written word and reading the long form.
Sonia Graham, CEO, and Musa Silla, community organiser of the Global Action Plan. You've been talking to me, John Higginson, on Communicating Purpose. If you'd like to hear more about what Higginson Strategy does with purpose-led clients, please visit higginsonstrategy.com.